Hey, Starting Nine listeners, you can find every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Summer is all about the freedom to have fun. Forget a vacation and take a tequila-cation with new Truly Tequila Soda. This refreshing blend of real fruit juice from concentrate, sparkling water, and premium tequila blanco is the drink of the summer. Try all four refreshing flavors, all with 5% ABV and just 100 calories. Truly Tequila Soda. Keep it light. Hard Seltzer Beverage Company, Boston, Massachusetts. Please drink responsibly.
Episode 138.
I feel like I've just walked down to the very last kennel at the pound as I'm on the way out, and I'm like, there's nothing even in this cage. Oh, wait, there is. You just curled up underneath its own food and water dish lies this pitiful little baby carabas, and nobody even knows the baby carabas is there. People have just walked by. How you doing, bud? You don't look great. I'll say that.
Terrible. I have a fever. My throat is swollen.
You need more cowbell.
Dude. Yeah. Oh my God. I made that joke to somebody. Somebody said, I'm staying home today. I've got a fever. And I said, oh, well, get yourself some cowbell. And they go, what's cowbell? I've only been taking Advil. That happened like 24 hours ago. I'm not even kidding.
Sad.
That's great.
Continue. Oh,
that's awesome. Mm. Yeah. So you got so Jared's got a little bit of the black lung, pup. Little strep throat. Jared's got a little strep throat. Jared's under the weather. Jared has fallen victim to the Petri dish, also known as Barstool HQ. Mm. It is essentially. I mean, I don't find it odd that you, as Jay Hay put it so eloquently, have fallen ill with a child's disease. You have mice. You have wild rat and mouse trampling about the facility, like, freely.
Yeah.
So it's not a mystery to me why any sort of airborne illness would afflict you.
Mm-hmm.
You're dodging bullets every day. Really,
every
what you're,
day.
I mean, you're forced to go in there without a bulletproof vest on, basically.
Mm-hmm. So I'm surprised I don't get sick more often, honestly.
I know. So credit to you for having a healthy immune system that unfortunately has fallen. Look, you can only take so many knockout blows, right?
Yeah.
Where one gets through.
This is actually the best I've been able to talk probably all day, because the Advil finally kicked in. Before, I couldn't even talk at all.
Oh, man. See, this is where you need. This is honestly, Jared, this is where you need to get the CBDMD in your life. And this is where you need to just take a couple drops, chill the F out, let that roll, and not do anything. Put your feet up. Do nothing. CBDMD can dial you in. Carabas, you need to take advantage of
it. Yeah, I'd love to do that.
That's the game plan. That's what you should be doing. A couple drops under the tongue, boom, boom, and we'll see how you're doing in a few hours. It'll be just fine.
I have a feeling that because you're not really going to hear much from me in this podcast, I also have a feeling that we're not going to be hearing very much from Cardinals fans.
Ooh. Oh. Yeah, I don't think we're gonna hear. I don't think we're gonna hear anything from Cardinals fans, anyway. It didn't go well. Did not go well.
Sure did. I don't think that the Cardinals choked, though. I just think the Nationals are that good.
The Nationals won. The Nationals. I don't know if it's a. I mean, it's definitely not a matter of the Cardinals losing the series, or excuse me, giving the series away. Right, that is not what happened. The Nats took the series.
They didn't have a lead.
That is what happened. It was a bludgeoning, and you got to look at exactly what can happen when you've got three guys that you feel like can execute on the mound, starting pitching wise, and a heck of a job by Hudson, Doolittle as well. Those guys were phenomenal. Lockdown City. That's exactly what they were looking for all season long. That's what they were sort of missing, right? That's why you look at the graphics that you're seeing, what, a 1% chance or whatever of making the postseason in
May. It was like a 0.01% chance.
Not even close. And now here they are. They are going to play for the World Championship. They are going to the World Series.
Yeah. And even like last year, after the Red Sox won the World Series, I remember walking out of Dodger Stadium and I got a Venmo payment for $500. And I was like, what the fuck is this? And then I remembered that I bet Big Cat $500 that the National League wouldn't win more than one game in the World Series back in like July. I was like, it's either going to be the Red Sox, the Yankees, or the Astros, and there's no National League team that can compete with any one of those three teams. I don't feel that way about the Nationals this year. Like, I think it's going to be a good series, whether it's the Astros or the Yankees. I feel like this Nationals team is built to go at least six or seven games.
Well, we're gonna see some. I think what's fun is thinking about the kind of offense that, or the type of offenses, if you will, that we're potentially going to see, and some of those, like the Rendon at bats, I'm excited for. The Soto at bats, I'm obviously excited for the Juan Soto at bats. But I just think, like, fuck, man, it's like Trey Turner grinding against the big three in Verlander, Cole, Greinke. Like, give me that. Give me all of that. I'm here for that. And on the other side, I want to see that potent Astro offense have to navigate, or however you want to look at it. I'm speaking from a pitcher's perspective. So the hitters have to face the pitchers. The pitchers get to face the hitters, if you catch my drift. So it's how are these hitters going to deal with what they're going to be tasting, like, well, 2 days in a row, and then Greinke. And that's going to be, look, should the Astros even get there, that's going to be the interesting part, is how those offenses match up, potentially. I mean, I'm just completely discounting the New York Yankees, but I think it's the Astros.
I wouldn't discount the Yankees, but on May 23rd, the Washington Nationals were 19-31. They were 10 games out. Yeah. They were 19-31 on May 23rd, and now they're going to the World Series. But yeah, I mean, I look at this Nationals team as a team that going into the season, I feel like a lot of us felt like they could potentially end up in the spot. It's the same thing kind of with the Twins, where like I don't carry too much, or when we're talking about Yankees versus Twins in the postseason, I don't care what Ruben Sierra did to Johan Santana. Like, that doesn't really equate to anything in 2019. So when I'm looking at the Nationals and, oh, they've never won a playoff series before, I don't think that really matters a whole lot when you're talking about a completely different team.
Right. There's one dude that's been there since sperm. There's one dude that's been there since the inception, and that's Ryan Zimmerman, right?
Yeah.
And everybody else has obviously, I don't know how you want to put it, but everybody else has come into this mix, come into this fold. They are not necessarily emblematic of years past or a total reflection of years past. So you add some guys to the mix, you've got a completely different chemistry. This is an exciting club that I think has the perfect mix of the veteran that you want to do it for, and the young guys who are excited to entrench themselves in this position, not only, I think, in the division as a team that you're going to have to contend with in the division, because they're not ready to just relinquish the crown to the Braves every year. That's not something that this team's ready to do. That's not on their radar. So, yeah, I'm really excited for the. I mean, fucking Howie Kendrick. Howie Kendrick. No deal, Howie. Oh, we got a deal, Howie. We got a deal. I love to see Howie Kendrick just turn into an absolute beast on the big stage. That's beautiful to watch. LCS yeah. MVP.
Yeah, there's a lot of it's about time storylines. It's about time we get to see Max Scherzer pitch in the World Series for the Nats. It's about time the Nats won a playoff series with how talented that they've been.
Max Scherzer, how about Steven Strasburg?
That's what I was going to say. It's about time that Steven Strasburg is healthy and pitching well in October and allowed to pitch in October.
Let me ask you this now. With that being said, does the move to initially hold Strasburg back and shut him down, and what was that, 12?
12.
If they go, or excuse me, if they win the World Series now, or does even getting there justify that decision early on? Because they told you that we'll have another opportunity. This will not be the last chance we have to do this. The front office told you that. All right? And how insane is it to process that and believe it in the sport of baseball? We all know how tough it is to get to October, especially get to where they're at right now, a chance to win a ring. So now that they're here and Strasburg has played the role he's played, is there any justifying that move initially? Because what if Strasburg has some aches and pains after being allowed to extend himself and is never really right after that? We're singing a completely different tune if they're having to make a decision about a roster spot because Strasburg is still continuing to come back from, still battling through that time. Remember when the Nats just let him roll, even though they should have been watching him, they just said, fuck it and let him roll. So like that could very well be the narrative right now. And it's not. And it's crazy that I think we're not really giving any credit to a front office that said, stand pat, we're going to protect this guy because we know what he could mean down the line, should we be in a position to pull some triggers? And they were. They went and pulled it on Scherz. They went and pulled it on Corbin. And now look what you have.
Yeah, I don't know that I really look at it that way.
I think you gotta entertain it a little.
Maybe if they went to the World Series in 2013 or 14, but we're so far removed from the 2012 season that I'm not gonna be like, well, Steven Strasburg's here and he's dealing on the way to a NL title because they arrested him in 2012.
But he's also dealt with some injuries between 12 and now as well. So that's kind of why I brought up them extending him early on, because if they extend him early on through that playoff race and God forbid something happens, think about the injuries that have occurred between now and then. That would just be essentially the starting point, right? That would be everybody's, see, it started here. When they could have protected him, they chose not to, and now he's had the like microfracture or whatever it was. Like he's had the other issues. Like I just think it's something to think about. And you make a point about it being so far down the line, but that's the idea of protecting an arm
it's a butterfly effect.
Well, if it's that type of a stallion that you think he can be, then you do say, you know what, we should be able to you're factoring in free agency, are you not?
Mm-hmm.
So that's 7 years. I'm going to need that. So yeah, I think if our window is what it is right now in 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, boom, 2019. So like you got to think, all right, we can protect them. And they chose to.
Yeah, but I think, like, to some extent, just like the criticism was like based on stuff we could never know. So is all of this. Like, the Nationals are one or two bounces away from continuing to be an epic failure over the last 8 years. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how thin the point on which this stuff turns is. Like,
I mean, you can make the case that if Christian Yelich never gets hurt, that the Nationals are out in the wild card.
Or like any other of like 10 different variables where this season could go differently.
I'm just drawing attention to how, like, I don't think there's much conversation going on about, hey, remember that time the Nats front office told everybody to stand pat with the Strasburg thing? And like Jared said, it's a little farther down the line, but it's like, oh shit, here they are again. Like, is anybody, Has anybody even addressed that? Maybe it's not a big deal. It's something I've thought about. Like, oh, wow, that's crazy. They told us to hold on. They'd be here, and now here they are.
To the point about the Nats pitching sort of officially arriving in September, the Cardinals hit 130 in the NLCS. That is the lowest batting average a team has ever put forward in a best of seven series. Not good.
Not good.
There is still the World Series yet to go, of course, so their ERAs could change. But right now, Scherzer and Strasburg both have a sub-2 in this current postseason. They would join the 2001 D-backs with Curt Schilling and Randy Johnson.
Woo!
And the 1996 Braves with Glavin, Maddox, and Smoltz. And the 91 Braves with, people forget, Steve Avery and John Smoltz.
The lefty, Steve Avery, the lefty.
Those are the only combinations of pitchers who have ever gone through a postseason and posted sub-2s with a minimum number of innings pitched. So we're getting, I think, what you talk about the super rotations and, oh, those haven't really delivered in the postseason lately or whatever and yada, yada, yada. I mean, this is what it looks like when it delivers.
Let's bang that Anibal Sanchez drum too. You kidding me? A 0.71
sure.
ERA?
Sure. He would be right there along with him.
Yeah, that's what you need. You don't need cowbell, Jared. You need Anibal. Holla.
Oh.
Also, according to our friend Sarah Langs, that 19-31 that you guys brought up, that was the second worst record through 50 games to ever advance to a World Series.
What was the worst?
2005 Astros, who of course lost in the World Series, but
they did.
Did win the NL pennant.
Did they even win a game in that World Series?
I thought it was it 4-0 or 4-1?
Might have been 4-1.
Stand by.
Yeah. That White Sox team, I mean, like, they didn't even need a bullpen.
Yeah, the pitching was pretty wild that year.
They had, like, every starter was throwing a complete game. It was ridiculous.
No, it was 4-0. It was 4-0. They did not win a game.
Hate to see that.
Yeah.
The ALCS. It's sounds a little like bit you, of a different.
Sounds like you guys have buried the Yankees, or at least Dallas has.
I have not.
I have not. I do think that Game 4 is the biggest game of the series. I think the dynamic changes entirely based on who wins this game tonight. I'm not surprised that the series is 2-1 in favor of the Astros, at least through three games, but I am not ruling out the Yankees still winning the series. This is kind of how you expect it to play out. From here, I don't know, because now you got Zach Greinke in Yankee Stadium.
And I'm afraid of that. I'm afraid of that.
He did not pitch well on the road in Tampa. You know, you have a guy that is on regular rest because the rainout. The rainout, I guess, helps big time when you have regular rest, because now you got Verlander in that spot for a potential, well, in a game five. But
how are you? Like, I don't know. Maybe it's just me putting so
what,
much stuff.
What about what's happened so far in the series, besides Gerrit Cole shoving, which we all kind of expected to happen? What have you seen that makes you discount the Yankees from winning the series?
I think that is enough for me, is watching Gerrit Cole and Justin Verlander. I mean,
Zach Greinke goes out there tonight, gives up 5 earned runs. Now we got a tied series, and I guess you have Verlander, Cole, but, I mean,
yeah,
you're on the road.
Like, I just don't – What you're on the road for what, 2 more days? I mean, so you're going to win one of those two ball games.
What if, I mean, like, we've seen Verlander.
You're going to win one of those two ball games, and then you're going back home 3-2.
All right, so Zach Greinke loses game 4, series tied. What if?
I'll say this. To fuck all with the what ifs. If this series even makes its way back to Houston, thanks for coming. It's a done deal. That's a done deal.
I don't see it that way. I mean, I kind of look at it like if you were up 2-1 in this series and you had Verlander and Cole going, it's different. But you got your win with Cole. Now you got to trust Greinke to go out there and pitch in Yankee Stadium. Don't know how that's going to go. You could very well be looking at a tied series. There's not enough. there's not enough dominance on Houston's side, at least from what I've seen. I'm not saying that I'm picking the Yankees. I'm just saying we can absolutely not sleep on the fact that they could easily win the series.
It's at 2-1 right now. No, you're right. There's a difference between me just heavily discounting them and not, you know, and the reality and the feasibility of them winning the series is still very much alive. Absolutely. This is me just fuck you Hubs. Let's say the Astros lose the ball game tonight. Now we've got a tied series, right? 2-2. Mm-hmm. And then it's Gerrit Cole against Severino.
Yep.
And let's say that goes to Gerrit Cole. Now it's 3-2. Oh, sorry. So it never go. The only way it goes back to Houston is for the final game, right? For game 7.
What do you mean? Right? No, game 6 would be in Houston.
Yeah. Okay. 6 and 7. So then you go back. Yeah. So then you go back for. You go back for game 6 with Verlander, and then.
No. Tanaka and Greinke game 4, Paxton Verlander game 5.
Paxton, yep. Verlander 5,
and then game 6 would presumably be
Severino and Cole.
Yeah, Severino and Cole.
Gotcha.
And game 7's everybody.
Yeah.
But who would you legitimately have start that game? Like, that's what's crazy. You get to a game 7 where it's like, the Yankees could, in theory, throw out a decent starter, but who the fuck? Or they could just bullpen you to death. They could start Chad Green or whatever. Who the Astros starting in game 7?
I think they go with a bullpen arm, and they tell Justin Verlander, you got the last 3 innings of this ballgame. So just be ready to go.
Game 7 in this series would be a fucking shit show.
Be ready. That's what I think, because I mean, and I think Verlander would be in a position to say, yeah, you know what? You're right. Let's go. And then I think it would be an all hands on deck approach, obviously.
That's why I think your case, Dallas, of this series is over. If they win one of the next 2, then okay. Now you're in a spot to be like, yeah, you got to get through Cole again. Just that's not happening.
Well, that's why I feel like that, because I feel like Verlander is going to be even.
That's why I think tonight is the biggest game of the series. No, you're the Yankees. There's no doubt. This thing back up, and you're still got you still have another game at home to play after that. Use that to your advantage to have a series lead going back to Houston, or you have if you're the Yankees, now you're down 3-1, and you still have to beat Gerrit Cole. Yeah, and Justin Verlander.
And what that does to Aaron Boone and the Pinstripers is put a lot of pressure on. That means every out crucial, right? You're playing for your playoff life at that point. Mm-hmm. You cannot lose. So you're at that point, you are the travel team who ran out of pitching on Friday and was able to piece together a win. Somehow got through Saturday as well. And like you now it's Sunday, you have no pitching whatsoever. You have no idea what's going on. That's kind of where the Yankees could find themselves if it's 3-1.
Yeah. Yeah. If the Astros win tonight, the series is over.
Yeah, I just think there is a I don't know, man. Are you guys seeing the difference between there's gonna be an obvious but I mean can you feel and see the difference between the at-bats and the swings that you've seen against arms like Verlander, arms like Cole, even arms like Bueller at times? Just with the high velocity, the swing and miss, the dominance factor that is there, the difference between those ABs and the at-bats that I think you see some guys take against Greinke, especially in the Yankees lineup. It's just... You're not necessarily fooling anybody, right? And he's got to be, I think at this point, he has to be on his, he's got to be dotting gnats directly in the ass. All four quadrants, both corners. Like that's got to happen. That's the difference, I think, between the Cole and the Verlander outings and the Greinke outings is the stuff. And the Yankees are just more comfortable against this guy.
Yeah, why wouldn't you be? They see the ball pretty well against Greinke. But yeah, again, I feel like I'm not saying whoever wins game four wins the series, but if Houston wins game four, it's fucking shut out the lights, ball game over. Did you like what you saw from Luis Severino?
I mean, there were folks talking about the same things that I kind of saw, which was, you know, when you needed to, he was able to dial it up, right?
Sure.
I
mean, the damage were solo homers. Like, you'll take that. You can live with that.
Well, that's it. And I mean, that's going to happen. Not necessarily in this off or this postseason, though. Home run, not necessarily a factor that it has been during the regular season.
Mm.
But yeah, Luis Severino gives the New York Yankees, and look, Tanaka, I don't know. I think I'm more impressed with what Tanaka has done.
But he's always done this in the playoffs. I feel like everyone sleeps on how great Tanaka has been in the playoffs throughout his whole career.
I know. Well, we were talking about that, but I think, again, just with when you talk about pitch mix and stuff-wise, like I just talked about some of the at-bats that we've seen being taken against Greinke because of the lack of velocity compared to his counterparts, compared to his cohorts in Verlander and Cole. Think about Tanaka and Severino. Those are two arms who are very different. Right? You got to remember, Tanaka was billed as the 94, 97, 98 guy when he got over here. And then, boom, slight tear, you know, just wasn't the same guy. But the success has allowed you to kind of forget that this isn't Tanaka who was supposed to be blowing cheese. This is Tanaka who is, you know, he can get it up there if he needs to. But we're talking about a guy who's pitching out of the same tunnel very effectively with the fastball split combo, slider. So I think just watching Tanaka flip the lineup three times has been fun. It's been impressive because it's been some weak contact.
Tanaka has made 7 postseason starts. He's got a 1.32 ERA, 36 strikeouts in 41 innings with a 0.73 whip.
Yeah. Taking care of business, man.
Yeah, that's pretty fucking good. So I don't know. I like the Yankees in game four. I feel like the narrative is going to be, Zach Greinke, and he's not going to be able to handle Yankee Stadium and this and that. How about the Astros just not being able to handle Tanaka? I feel like that's probably a more fair storyline. Like this whole thing about...
Well, look, you know what? This is something you got to think about. The Astros, a team that is great at making adjustments, a team that is great at doing their homework, they're going to be seeing the same arm twice in a matter of, you know, a week or whatever. There's going to be adjustments made.
Sure.
There's going to be adjustments. I mean,
it's not like other teams haven't seen Tanaka twice in the same series, but.
Yeah. Are other teams the Houston Astros? Cause they're not. They're
I'd like to not. See. Cause I mean, didn't he pitch against Houston in the ALCS a couple of years ago? So he pitched in 2017. Tanaka got game 3 of the division series. He got game 1 of the ALCS, 6 innings, 2 earned runs. And then the second time he saw Houston, 7 innings, 0 earned runs. So he actually got better the second time against Houston.
Oh, different ball club, Jared. It's a different ball club this year.
Relatively the same ball club. So we'll see what happens. I think, again... I hate the whole like anxiety narrative with Zach Greinke. I understand that it exists, but it's like the guy can't talk to people. That doesn't mean he can't pitch.
He pitched in LA pretty well.
Yeah, that's like he has difficulty answering questions from the media and having social interactions. The guy can pitch in front of a rocking crowd. He's done it his entire career. So if Zach Greinke goes out there and doesn't pitch well, everyone's going to be talking about the anxiety. How about just crediting the Yankee bats because they took care of business? And then the same thing with Tanaka. If Tanaka goes out there and shoves, I feel like that's just a thing that could very much happen tonight.
Yeah, no doubt.
Go ahead, Dallas.
Well, no, I was just going to say I like this is the Yankees bubble right now of oxygen for them to stay alive. If they can win this game, then they're in a hell of a lot better spot than they will ever be.
Tanaka's 151 batting average allowed is the lowest by a starter in postseason history for all of those with at least 40 innings pitched. It's Tanaka, Gerrit Cole, George Earnshaw, who pitched in the late 20s and early 30s, Scherzer, and then someone named Art Neff. And his OPS against is the second best ever to Eddie Plank, Hall of Famer from the early 1900s.
Yeah, wow. Big Plank. Everyone remembers the Plank.
Of course, of course.
Yeah, everyone, the crowd was, during his starts, they'd be like, walk the plank, walk the plank. And he was electric. Well,
that was when he would hit for himself, too. They were like, yeah, you don't want this guy.
Yeah, give him four, walk the plank.
Yep.
That would actually be unbelievable if there was like a stud baseball player and his last name was Plank. The walk the plank t-shirts would, I mean,
fly off the shelves. You wouldn't be able to print them fast enough.
I could put my kids through college on walk the plank t-shirts.
Like, could you imagine if it was Barry Lamar Plank?
Yeah.
Like, wow. Yeah. The intentional walk here. Oh my, walk the plank.
Yeah. Walk the plank. I feel like if I were Mike Trout and I was sick of all the fish jokes, I'd change my last name to Plank.
Just so you could sell your own t-shirts.
Michael Plank.
I played with a Mike Plank, by the way, 13, 14, 15 years old.
Did you really?
Sure did.
What's he up to now?
He is now a very successful basketball coach.
Okay, so he gave up on his dreams of being a baseball player.
Well, the dream kind of gives up on you, Jared, at times. You know, it's really not you giving up on a dream. Sometimes the game just chews you up, spits you out maybe before you're ready.
Mm, preach. who do we got in game four tonight? What are our official picks?
My official pick is the New York Yankees have no fear of Zach Greinke.
Yeah, you don't say.
And Zach, the storyline is going to be how Justin Verlander, Gerrit Cole, and the Houston Astros were still able to get to the World Series and get through this division or get through this championship series without the help of Zach Greinke.
Yeah. Jay?
7-5 Yankees.
7-5 Yankees.
So Jay Hayes hammering the over. Hammer the over.
To be honest with you, I also have the Yankees scoring 7 runs. I just don't know where those other 5 are coming from with Tanaka on the mound and the Yankee bullpen. So I'm going 7-2 Yankees.
Wow.
Well, hey, listen, what you have to, like, we could be playing 4 games in 4 days. Is that correct?
Correct.
So you have,
there would be a travel day. Are they not giving them the travel day?
Oh, yes, there would be a travel day. So only 3 games, I guess. I haven't looked.
No. 4 days? There's a game Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. There are games right now.
Boom. So that's what I thought. So Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I just assume because of the rain out. Now you have to condense it because you've got the World Series schedule you have to consider. You can't just start moving shit back. The Yankees are going to be faced with having to utilize this bullpen, Jared, for potentially the next 4 days. That is a task that is way easier talked about than actually fulfilled.
Yeah.
So if you're Aaron Boone, you have to win 3 more baseball games. Right?
Yep.
You got to win 3 more baseball games. Okay. And you've got the opportunity to do that here at home. Those are all going to come in a row. So the guys that maybe haven't pitched back-to-back days in a while, they're going to be forced to do that. And the guys that have gone back-to-back days, 3 days in a row is now going to be the cup of tea. And that's going to be the test. Same thing for the Houston Astros. But for the Yankees, their strength being the bullpen, that's why it's the test. Is because outside of what, Tanaka, like, are you expecting to get 7 strong from Severino?
Nope. Or Paxton. Same thing.
Or Paxton?
No.
Right? So tonight is your night, if you're the New York Yankees, for Masahiro Tanaka to keep the bullpen in as good a shape as he possibly can, knowing that the next 2 games are as pivotal as possible, and you can sort of open up the gate and let the horses run for the next 2 days if Tanaka can give you the outing you need from him tonight. Otherwise, Aaron Boone, put your managing hat on. Is this going to be go time?
Before we move on, the MLB investigated the Houston Astros for the sign-stealing thing, and the league found that the Astros did not violate any policies for the whole whistling thing. I mean, sign-stealing, get the fuck over it. If you're not using electronics to steal signs, well, then just be fucking smarter about it.
Yeah, and the whole verbal command thing, I'll hit on this. This is something that happens high school, college, right? And maybe even at times, I guess, I don't know, through the minor leagues. I wasn't in the dugout to hear the conversations that these guys are having with each other or what sort of communication that they're into. But in high school, we had your pitches. If I knew what was coming and I'm on deck, you know, your last name or your number is off speed. Anything else is a fastball. Like, just shit like that. Same thing in college, right? If you're on second base, the transferring of signals, hand position, which way your head's looking between pitches or, you know, right before the pitch, that's all street legal. So it's about, where is your verbal command? Where are people drawing the line with the verbal command? That's where the whistling is becoming the issue, is people are like, well, what the, it's basically like just yelling at them. And I've often said this. I've had this conversation for 20 years. What would you do if Jose Altuve stood at second base and held up two fingers and let Carlos Correa take his hacks? What would you do? What would you do? Like, what could you do? What would be the course of action? Seriously, are the Yankees going to start drilling someone? Because now you're putting base runners on, and now we've got, but that's a serious question. At that point in time, would there have to be attention paid to sign stealing? Would we then have to outlaw sign stealing, therefore making the art of sign stealing all the more important in the game of baseball? Because as the culture of baseball has shown you, tell us that we can't do it, and guess what? We're going to find a way to do it even fucking better. And that's just the reality, I think, of not only baseball, but a lot of scenarios, right? That's a scenario that I'm going to be faced with in a few short years, Jared. Don't date him. He's got cigarettes rolled up in his shirt. He's got a leather jacket. He rides a fucking Harley. You know what? I may very well come home to a daughter with fucking live free, die hard, ride free fucking tattooed on her neck and face. I have no idea. I have no fucking... But
rides a Harley. What is this, 1997?
J.A., God damn it. I was feeling it, all right? But that's like, seriously, like, what would your thought be? What's your query? What are you going to tell him? What are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
So the whistling. Hey, Jared, you hear me whistle? Better get that foot down, buddy. Here comes the heater.
Sign stealing was very fun and very easy in high school because all the stupid kids that we played against had no idea. They had no idea.
Well, that, and you were 26 playing against 15-year-olds at times too. So, I'm
sure. Oh yeah. Well, we didn't have to steal signs against the 16-year-olds. We were 23. Just throw me your best shit. We're gonna put it in the trees.
That's right. You gotta let them fuck around.
Punk bitch.
Teach those little sons of bitches.
Yeah.
They probably, what they needed was some CBD as well.
Jared. Yeah, they definitely needed CBD.
I'm telling you, I hit the CBD the other night, these drops, and it was after a softball game. And sure, I may have gone over some propulsion that I was going over, you know, with the Wright brothers. But the drops, my elbow, I almost felt like it fell off, like it went away. I couldn't even, that's how great this shit feels to me. That's how good my body feels after taking this shit. That's why I'm a huge, I told you I'm a fan of the roll-on too. I like the roll-on, but CBDMD has got, they've got the roll-ons, They've got the drops. I'm a big fan of the drops. The CBD PM, this stuff, you're looking to knock out? Hey-o! This stuff blends 500 milligrams, Carabas. 500 mg of high-quality CBD, my friend. Melatonin, I'm sure you heard of it. Valerian root, get it in you. Chamomile, oh, the sweet essence of sleep, Jared. Hits your tongue like a tincture that tingles. My Lord. CBD MD. Playoff baseball's in full swing, Jared. You need to get your CBD MD in full swing as well.
Would love to.
So I need you to do me a favor. I need you to go to cbmd.com and I need you to enter starting 9 at checkout. So once again, starting 9, that's one word, at cbdmd.com. You get 25% off. 25% off your next order. Premium CBD oils, folks. 25% off. Promo code starting 9. I promise you, you will not miss out. Or I promise you, you will not be disappointed. Do not miss out. CBDMD.com.
Hell yeah. Joe Madden's no longer unemployed.
Nope. Nope. They,
3-year deal with the Angels. This is, comes as no surprise, really. I feel like we all kind of saw this coming. If anything, we were kind of curious if he would still take the job after the whole Tyler Skaggs scandal with the employee being the supplier and there being 5 other Angels that the team employee named, and then also the 2 Angels executives that allegedly knew about Tyler Skaggs' drug usage. That has not deterred Joe Madden from choosing the Angels as the next team for him to manage. So, I don't know. I mean, how could you turn down the opportunity to be Mike Trout's manager? But at the same time, I don't know that the Angels are the best fit for Joe Madden.
It's a lot more than that. And I had him going to San Diego up until the minute that this job became available.
I wanted him in Philly.
Obviously, the minute that this job became available, it was a no-brainer. Because where does he come from? The coaching, you know, the school of Soch. So he is now just an extension, essentially. That's why the relationship he has with the front office and with the owner is very comfortable. He was there when they won the World Series, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they know what they're getting. They know who they're getting. And they've been able to sort of send him off to college and watch him graduate, watch him start his own company, watch him have a tremendous amount of success. And now they're welcoming him back in the fold. And I don't think there's anybody else right now that the Angels would be comfortable with bringing back into the fold, because it's kind of like, hey, it's kind of like hooking back up with that ex, you know, but it's not like there was a falling out. It's not like you ever really broke up. You just have now circled back and have made things official, because now this is a guy who kind of knows what those skeletons in your closet may look like.
Sure.
He may know whose boots are under your bed. He is probably the safest landing spot for the Angels in a myriad of ways, not only for the baseball side of things, because they know who they're getting. Like I said, Socha, he talks about, you know, the Angel method or whatever he said. This is how they're going to play. It's a brand of baseball that has been here before. He was referencing Mike Socha. So it's not like they're that far removed from the Mike Socha era, for crying out loud. This is just yes, for me, this is also the guy, when you think about the culture stuff, the reasons that you think it might have worn thin in Chicago were some of the reasons that it was great early on in Chicago. It's because he allowed these young kids, the Rizzos, the Bryants, to develop the Brizzo. He was handling the Addison Russell stuff. He was also, you know, not handling Javi Baez, but allowing Javi Baez to blossom and be the charismatic player that he is. Now you have everything that you just talked about with the front office and executives involved, other players involved. Who better maybe than Uncle Joe slash Grandpa Joe, however you want to look at him, to come in and put the arms around this organization and say, hey, guys, look, I've been here before. This is what we can do. This is how we're going to do it. We'll be okay. We'll be okay. Why? Because we've got the best player in baseball, and our glasses will always, from here on out, be half full. Your glasses always half full with Joe Maddon sitting at your table.
Jay, are you going to say something?
No. I just think it's interesting to look at this decision within the context of all the open jobs that exist in baseball.
Like, yeah,
not in a good or bad way. I just think it's interesting that there are as many open jobs as there are. And Maddon chose the Angels. The Angels chose Maddon. And where does that leave other people?
Yeah. Where do you think his best fit was?
No, I think it was here. I think it was this situation.
Oh, yeah.
I think this was the, like, it's cliche. Everybody pointed it out. But I do think some of that was on merit. Like, it's a team that has ambitions of winning in the present. It's hard to ignore the sort of opportunity that it would be to coach or manage the single best player of his generation, one of the greatest players of all time, potentially. I think that has real appeal, particularly for a guy who has already won a World Series and has, not that you stop wanting to win World Series, but you can kind of check that one box off a little bit.
Yeah.
I think Ohtani has to present some level of intrigue for a guy like Joe Maddon, who, if anything, you know, he's got that reputation as a thinking manager. Whether that's totally earned or not is probably debatable, but Ohtani, to me, if I'm a manager, particularly one who's been around a long time, the opportunity to maybe do different things with a talent like that would be really appealing.
Joe Maddon's gonna fuck around and have Ohtani play all nine positions. Start the game and then play the rest of the fucking field.
Yeah, I think, like, there isn't a managerial job that, to me, is a home run, no questions about it. You can walk right in and be a certified World Series contender. I don't think that opening exists. So in that world, I think that this is a really strong fit. Obviously, the pitching has to come around. We've been saying that for the better part of a half decade, but
there's some slots open, right? What do we got? Mets, Cubs, Padres, Giants, yeah. Pirates,
Royals.
Phillies, Royals. So out of these clubs, when I think about availability, opportunity, I think you have to consider right now the transition that's occurring and the relationship that exists between front offices and the manager. That is as different and as demanding, in my opinion, as it's ever really been. Because you're asking a guy to be able to process information, relay information from the top to him and from him down to the players, right?
Yeah.
So he now has to be capable of processing said information, and the front office has to be confident in his ability to do so, because it's no longer a front office saying, we're going to sit up here in the box, you go down there and just be the baseball man that's been the baseball man his whole life, and we'll trust that everything you're doing is right for our baseball team, because why wouldn't a baseball man be making the right baseball decisions? That doesn't exist anymore. But there are some clubs who, if you're not spending the money or applying the analytical approach, you are essentially representing exactly that. A comfortable spot for, quote unquote, these dinosaur baseball men to exist in a place where you don't have to worry about making moves because the front office isn't worried about competing or contending. And I'm not, at no point am I saying that, like, baseball men don't have a place in the game. I'm the last dude that you'll ever hear that from. I know exactly how important those dudes are. Like, every team needs fucking 12 of them in their clubhouse, if you ask me. So I think those are things that you have to consider, like the Giants, right? They've got a pocketbook. They've also got a very forward-thinking GM in Farhan Zaidi, and how that is applied, you know, him trying to stay under the luxury tax, what sort of resources he's going to give you, and how much is he going to be involved in the structure of your lineup on a day-to-day basis. These are now things that I think a manager or a potential manager starts to evaluate maybe more than they ever did before.
So, So to me, like, I mean, everything you said is correct. I mean, to list off just for this conversation, some of the names that have been linked to teams in general: Buck Showalter, Joe Girardi, Dusty Baker, David Ross, Mike Matheny, Eduardo Perez, Gabe Kapler. The latest report for the Padres is that the job is down to Ron Washington and Jace Tingler, who has apparently spent the past season as the field coordinator with the Rangers. He was with them under Jeff Bannister. He has experience in managing in the minors, et cetera, et cetera. To me, these kind of fit
in Washback managing a team.
To me, these fit into like almost two or three different buckets in terms of the jobs available. Like, to me, the lowest tier is without question the Royals and the Pirates. And I think given the talent level, you could put the Giants in that as well, although I think they're clearly the most attractive of those three. But to me, like, those are the three least attractive options available to anyone here. And then I think, like, the Mets, Cubs, and Phillies are precarious situations for a manager. And I think that's part of the reason why you've heard mostly veteran managers linked to those, is because they all, and correct me if you guys disagree, they all envision themselves as contenders, right? Yep. In the present, right? Cubs, Mets, Phillies.
You're leading me down a beautiful path, Jahan. Just waiting for you to wrap it up, because this is going to be great.
All right. So all three of them consider themselves contenders, and I'm not convinced that as things stand today, that's necessarily a safe assumption. And when you take a job like that, when the expectation is to win, and maybe those expectations outstrip how good your actual roster is, that can be a very dangerous situation.
And now that you have sort of put these job opportunities in tiers, I think we can, do you agree that the Giants and Padres would be, well, like, where are you putting that?
I mean, I think the Padres is an extremely attractive situation.
Absolutely. Yeah, so I think sure. So now let's take those candidates that you just mentioned, and let's sort of think about where those candidates fit in and why they would fit in to which organizations. So let's take the David Rosses, the Eduardo Perez's, and is it fair to put them in a Gabe Kapler sort of conversation with the limited experience, even though Kapler now has the experience as a Phillies manager? I mean, he's not too far removed from a David Ross situation or from an Eduardo Perez situation. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. I mean, Ross seems like a natural fit with the Cubs for obvious reasons.
That's going to be weird, though, because he's still played with some of the guys that are on that team.
Right, right. And he's so what I'm getting at is, how important is a guy who has those types of, wow, I swear to God, like, we didn't write any of this down. This isn't planned. Nothing we're talking about here. But, Jared, thank you. Think about the synergy that David Ross could potentially create or potentially represent for the Cubs organization if everything operated as they would love it to, which is David Ross be able to be the politician for the front office, be able to be the pipeline from the clubhouse to the front office in a positive way for the players, knowing that David Ross has their back. The front office knows that they've got David Ross, a guy that they can trust, a guy that they're confident in, that can handle their information, that could enforce their game plans. That would be a beautiful marriage, right?
Yeah.
So Eduardo Perez doesn't necessarily fit into that Cubs box. Neither does a Buck Showalter. So maybe the Cubs entertain a David Ross for those very reasons. Maybe David Ross isn't entertained at all by the Cubs for those very reasons. And maybe an Eduardo Perez is entertained for those reasons. He's a guy who can communicate. He's bilingual. He believes in the analytics. He has a handle on the analytics. I've worked very closely with Eddie. He was one of the guys that was fun to be able to have those conversations with, because he did understand. He's what, Jay?
No, he's been on a bench before. You know,
yeah, he's been on a bench before.
Coaching
he knows
staff.
What's up. He's been in the he knows what's up. So just the evaluation, I think, is now a two-way street, really, more so than it's ever been. And I think that's kind of fun.
I'm subjectively, just for rooting interests, I would love to see Baker and Buck get one last spin.
Yeah.
In the same position.
I hope Buck ends up with the Padres. But The whole
no, I want, like, I want Buck with the Mets and
oh god
and Dusty with the Phillies.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Either combination of that would be cool.
Yes, that would be so fucking beautiful.
I tweeted about Dusty Baker being interviewed by the Phillies, and I said, which some people took it the wrong way. Most people got it. I just said, you know, interviewing Dusty Baker, if you're the Phillies, all that says to me is that you have no organizational philosophy. Like, how do you go from a guy like Gabe Kapler to a guy like Dusty Baker? And then people are like, oh, Dusty Baker, this and that. Like, I'm not saying that Dusty Baker sucks as a manager, but you're going from one kind of category of a manager to a different category of a manager. And I feel like if you were going to sort of try somebody else, but have, like, I could see David Ross with the Phillies. Like, if you want to see David Ross as a manager, and you're going like the same route as like the Alex Cora's, the Aaron Boone hirings, things like that, where, you know, it's like you've got a guy that's, so, you know, it's basically like having a player manager. It's if you got a guy in the clubhouse that you feel like is still on the team. Yeah, I guess like it would be cool to see David Ross managing the Cubs, but, you know, he was John Lester's binky. He was his personal catcher. You mean to tell me if David Ross has to take John Lester out of a game in a big spot, that's not going to be awkward, or that, you know, Anthony Rizzo is his best buddy, and if Anthony Rizzo is not hustling down the line, that he's going to bench him to send a message to the rest of the guys? Like, those aren't things that are going to happen. So I don't know. I think he's too close to this team, but I'd like to see him managing. I just don't know if the 2020 Cubs is a great place to make your managerial debut.
Well, and again, that's why I kind of put these managers in their own tiers or their own groups respectively, is because I think the state of the club, like a Pirates, why can't David Ross manage the Pirates?
Sure.
For the fact that they're not spending money, they don't appear to really give a shit about getting rolled over in the Central. They don't care. And if they don't care, then why not give a guy who really can't do you any worse, if that's how you want to look at it. And I'm not saying that about Rossi. What I'm saying is, if a club like the Phillies is shifting gears from such a forward thinker in Gabe Kapler and now bringing in a potential old school guy in Dusty Baker, what's stopping the Pirates from saying, you know what, Clint, appreciate you, but I think it's going to be a new era here. And I think we're going to try to see if a younger face, someone who might be in tune a little more with the numbers. And I don't know if that's really David Ross's bag. I don't know if he's heavily like analytically inclined, but what's stopping the Pirates from doing that?
Yeah, I think this is kind of how I feel about Gabe Kapler and his future. I feel like Kapler could fall into that same trend of the managers who get fired and take a step back for a year or two. You know, some of them do media, some of them do whatever they want. But I think I could see if Andrew Friedman is going to stay with the Dodgers, what are your thoughts on Gabe Kapler potentially linking back up with the Dodgers in some behind the scenes role for a couple of years before he explores another managerial position?
Very strong. Very strong.
Yeah.
Because it's home. And
it's what he knows.
Yeah. Well, and it's like, and sometimes, like, look, there's guy, like, I'll say this. Bob Guerin was my manager. There were opinions about Bob Guerin and his ability to manage. Bob Guerin was the bench coach there prior to getting the managerial job. People really liked Bob Guerin, the bench coach. Players really enjoyed Bob Guerin, the bench coach. People had their opinions about Bob Guerin, the manager. So sometimes, to your point, the job title and responsibility can affect or change an individual. And sometimes the individual just operates differently in a different space with different freedoms. And I think, like, Gabe Kapler's ability to roam / rove, as we say, and impact an organization, that might be something Gabe is able to step back and say, you know what? While I appreciate what was happening here at the big league level in a dugout, I've had the experience moving around the minor leagues and blah, 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 helping kids. Maybe that's where I like, who knows? But to your point, they'll have the opportunity to weigh that.
Yeah. I think that that's probably what happens with Gabe. Also, Brad Ausmus, what are the chances that we just never see him manage again?
I don't look, he'll be a special assistant somewhere, like an advisor somewhere, and he's not done with baseball.
I don't think he's done with baseball. I just don't know what team would roll the dice on him again.
It's a tough look. After how poorly his first stint went, which I think was universally the take, it is a tough look. Even if Joe Maddon becomes available, which I know happened to Rick Renneria in the first go round with the Cubs, it's a tough look on your second gig to get fired and have basically people say on the way out the door in more polite wording, like that you just didn't get the job done. Like you weren't very good.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know what organization would be like, you know what? That's our fucking guy.
Yeah. Well, maybe not initially.
Maybe not. Yeah. No, he's. Nah. Yeah, you know what they say about managers? They get better over time.
Hey, that's why Dusty's getting phone calls.
Mm. Dallas, I saw you did a little swipe up ad for GOAT. I was peeping your shoe collection. I haven't seen in its entirety, but
those are just a little taste. Just a little taste. Goat has been goat has been good to me.
Yeah, it appears so.
It's been good to me. If you don't know about Goat, if you're a sneakerhead, and I don't know that I'm a sneakerhead per se. Maybe I am. I guess I am. I'm a closet sneakerhead. I don't flaunt it. I don't really talk about it because I'm not a huge basketball guy. But I love shoes. I've got a Jordan 11 addiction. I do.
Jordan 11s, huh?
Yeah, I do. I've probably got like, I don't know, if I could count, I got like 12 pairs of those, I think. 11 or 12 pairs. Maybe I've got 11 11s. Who knows? Mm. But GOAT, they hook it the F up. GOAT.com, safest way to buy and sell authentic sneakers online. Maybe you don't have the opportunity to bop down to some of these six shops I got here in LA where I can go get footed up. Goat.com, next best option. Thousands of styles. Anything you need. Everything you're looking for. Past, present, throwbacks. Like I said, I've got the 11 addiction. They are my tambourine man, if you will. Even shoes that are just about to be released. Not out to the general public. These shoes aren't gen pop yet. GOAT has got you covered. Yeezys, Jordans, Gucci's. GOAT gives you access to everything you're looking for, folks. They work only with trusted sellers. And before any shoe is sold, every detail is inspected. Stitching, color, size, weight, authenticity, everything. GOAT ensures every shoe matches exact factory specs. If it doesn't, well, GOAT ain't dealing it. That's the bottom line. 15 million users, Carabas. So anytime I feel like there's a new drop, anytime I feel like there's something that I need to get my hands on, my feet in, GOAT is the go-to. You'll find exactly what you need, best prices, shit's guaranteed. You find the perfect 100% authentic sneaker at goat.com/starting. Okay? Starting. Plus, you'll be supporting our show. So you got to do it right now. Before the sneakers you want are gone. Go to goat.com/starting. Spell GOAT, G-O-A-T, .com/starting. Got it? Good. It's not a bad deal.
Yeah, I need to get back on my sneaker game. I haven't bought like a new pair in like a month. Jay, hey.
Yes.
Are you ready, sir?
I am very ready.
Your Oakland essay.
I am. Oh, yeah. I feel like, Jay, if you could maybe enter some, some E40 here. Maybe some Mac Dre.
Just for context, for anyone who doesn't know why Jay Hay had to do a book report on Oakland.
Too short.
I think it was like the beginning of September. We had a bet. We had to pick our players to hit 50. Jay Hay, you had who did you have?
Christian Belly.
No, Cody Bellinger.
Oh, Bellinger, that's right.
Yeah, Jay Hay had Bellinger. I had Mike Trout. And Dallas
correctly chose
Pedro Alonso.
That's right. Not only was Pedro Alonso the leader of home runs, he was the only one to eclipse the 50 mark.
Yeah, he was.
So not only did I pick the only guy who was really even a contender, I picked the home run king. So
you did. So because of that, Jay Hay has to read an essay about Oakland, and next podcast I'll be reading an essay that I've written about Stockton, California.
And so here it is.
Without further ado,
the story of Oakland arguably starts with the Ohlone people, a Native American tribe formerly known as the Costanoans, who occupied the territory well before the 1770 arrival of European explorers. But for our purposes, we will skip ahead to 1772, which is how these Eurocentric book reports work. It was then that explorers, on behalf of the Spanish king, claimed the area now known as Oakland, along with the rest of California, for the throne. In the mid-1800s, the area was granted to Luis Maria Peralta, no relation to Johnny or Willie, as best I could find, by the Spanish royal government. And upon his death, it was divided amongst his family. One section was called Encinal, which is apparently Spanish for Oak Grove, thanks to the heavily forested area giving the city its eventual name once the Peralta family was essentially conned, forced, and litigated into selling their territorial rights. In 1851, development began, settlements were opened up, and it was around then that the town's very first mayor, Horace Carpenter, or Carpentier, more likely, delivered his first address as mayor. The chief ornament and attraction of this city consists, doubtless, in the magnificent grove of evergreen oaks which covers its present site and from which it takes both the former name of Encinal and its present one of Oakland. Carpentier would last about a year on the job before corruption brought him down and he was replaced. In 1852, the town was incorporated and it grew steadily thanks to the construction of railroads, which enabled it to become a major rail port and was the western end of the first transcontinental railroad. After first bustling, thanks to those railroads, by the late 1920s, the city was home to many automobile manufacturing plants, including Chrysler. It was at that point that Oakland had become known to some as, quote, the Detroit of the West, one of the all-time great backhanded compliments. Jobs and workers flooded to Oakland during World War II, thanks to its expansive shipbuilding and canning industries. After the war, those industries predictably declined, and in combination with some issues in the automobile industry, led to many lost jobs in the Oakland area. Some post-war highlights include, at one point having the largest office tower west of Chicago.
Yeah.
Home to the nation's first large-scale heroin and cocaine distribution operated by drug kingpin Felix Mitchell.
Let's get high.
A murder rate twice that of San Francisco and New York.
Don't start no stuff, won't be no stuff.
Not now, but at one point. A key role in the psychedelic and funk music scene.
Dr. Timothy Leary.
And the Loma Prieta earthquake in 1989, which obviously affected more than just Oakland.
House is a rocket, don't come a knocking.
It is, by current measurement, the 8th most heavily populated city in California and the 45th largest in the United States. It was, however, the number 2 ranked city to decriminalize mushrooms. It is both objectively extremely ethnically diverse, and in fact, a 2019 study showed it was the most ethno-racially diverse city in the country, and also one of the nation's great shipping ports to this day, ranking as the 5th busiest in the United States by cargo volume. And finally, according to the data collected by the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, Oakland ranked as number 1 in climate among U.S. cities, and also, in a separate study, number 1 in California for amount of money paid out in civil lawsuits over police abuse claims.
Oh, that no.
That is the story of Oakland.
Wow.
Tough love. That was outstanding.
Thank you.
Good job, Jay.
Thank you.
That was very good.
I appreciate
that
it.
That was an incredible, in-depth look
thorough
at how Oakland came to be.
Yep. Obviously, you could go in-depth on any one of those things more than I did, but I wanted to give the listeners like a nice overview. So we did about 250 years of history.
That's beautiful.
Thank you.
That's beautiful. Oakland, what a place to be. Somewhere special is Oakland's tagline. Oakland, somewhere to raise your family.
Yep. City of trees.
It is absolutely somewhere to raise your family.
Yes. No, for sure.
It's an available option.
Welcome to Oakland. It's an available option.
Where else? I mean, name me another place you get ethno diversity and the best climate on the planet. Name me. I just did Oakland.
No, that was that's definitely a big selling point for sure.
Mm-hmm. I mean, like quite literally.
Yeah.
Welcome to Oakland. It's here.
I can't wait to hear about Stockton next week.
It's gonna be great.
Should be. Stockton, city of dreams.
The bar has been set.
You know that Stockton's an all-American city, like a rated all-American. I just need you to know that.
I mean, I'll find out when I research. Yeah,
I have no doubt that we're going to hear all about its rating.
Yeah. I'm going to go very in-depth.
All right. Final thoughts.
Final thoughts.
Zach Greinke. Got to get it right. Got to get it right. Because if he can't get it right, and he is the sort of anchor that drudges the Astros along, I don't know that. I mean, I hope if they're able to get through the New York Yankees, I hope it's not something that persists into the World Series. Because if it is, that could be a problem. That could be a problem. So this is a big start, not only for the Astros to try to go up 3-1, not only for the Yankees to try to tie the series, obviously, in the face of going down 3-1, but also for Zach Greinke to try to right some issues.
Final thought for me, I really hope that the layoff doesn't fuck with the Nationals. I really hope that they, whoever they end up playing in the World Series, we've seen time and time again a team that sweeps and they dominate their opponent in the championship series, and then they get into the World Series, and they kind of just get dusted by the team that either just played a series that went 6 or 7 games, and they're just in the swing of things. And, you know, you'd hate to see a team get, not penalized, but put in a disadvantage spot because they handled their business as swiftly as possible.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's always something to consider. There's always something to playing meaningful ball games down the stretch heading into the postseason, and hitters will tell you, I'm feeling good. I don't want a day off. So
my final thought, congratulations to Jared on his Michael Jordan flu podcast.
Thank you. Thank you. I did it for the grounds crew. We're on episode 138. I've been on all 138 of them, and I wasn't about to. It was kind of like the Cal Ripken Jr. thing where they started doing some funky shit just to make sure that he could play. I am on all types of drugs to clear up my throat so I could even be able to speak at this point. So you're welcome, grounds crew, for going above and beyond to provide baseball analysis here today.
Advil. Or cowbell.
Or cowbell. Take some cowbell and get back out there.
Wee-haw!